session number 21590, Rule 1.
Jack Bailey, Rule 1. Where were you born, please?
West End, Southampton. West End, Southampton.
Which year was this?
1919.
Did you grow up and have your schooling in Southampton?
Yes.
Which school did you go to?
Southampton, Church of England. West End, Church of England. I started when I was 5 and I left when I was 14.
In 1933?
Yes.
Did you get a job?
Yes, in a box factory.
Is that what you were doing when war broke out?
No, as a lorry driver.
Still living in Southampton?
West End, and then to Bittern, Southampton.
Had you joined TA before the war?
No.
Did you hear Neville Chamberlain declare war on Germany?
I did indeed.
Under what circumstances?
I was having a weekend in at Highcliffe. We did now in Dorset. It was in Hampshire then, of course.
How did you feel about the news?
I expected it, actually, because we had a bad scare about a few months before from Germany. It obviously was building up that way.
Did you feel any sense of dismay?
Only the fact that I had to go. I knew I would have to go.
Did the war affect you at first?
Not at first, because I went in March 1940, and we had no equipment. We were still dressed in civilian clothes. At the time of Dunkirk, all I had was a pickaxe shaft.
Were you called up?
Yes.
How did you feel about that?
I didn't mind, because I think it was a good cause, and all my friends were going.
Where did you do the basic training?
Hastings, Sussex. We were put in private houses there. The basic training was very basic. We had two guns with no ammunition and a mock breech, which you load that and shade out bang.
But hadn't you done any square bashing before this?
No, we had no. Well, we had a road, a gravel road, we used to march up and down that. And that was our basic, I'm afraid. At the time of Dunkirk, I still hadn't had a rifle or fire one.
Which unit were you in?
I was in A Battery, 56 Heavy Regiment, Royal Artillery.
Had you wanted to go into the artillery?
I didn't mind the artillery because I thought that was better than infantry.
And you didn't have any guns at first?
We had 2 6-inch guns mounted on 8-inch trailers from World War I. We had no ammunition.
What kind of men were you with in this unit?
Oh, mostly civilian, not myself.
Did you see anything of the men who came back from Dunkirk?
Yes, because as soon as Dunkirk, we were moved into Kent. A place called Lymph and near Maidstone. And I did see quite a few come back from Dunkirk in the state they were in. But we could also see Boulogne burning, the smoke from Boulogne. You could see that quite easily from Folkestone.
What did the men who came back from Dunkirk look like?
A bit ragged, but they didn't seem to be disheartened at all.
Did you speak to any of them?
No, I'm afraid I didn't.
What do you remember happening next?
We had ammunition arrive, but not much, about 20 rounds. We were at a place called Unamore in Sussex. The funny thing, it was a place called Dumb Woman's Lane. That's where Spike Milligan lives at this moment, in the same lane. We actually fired one Rainier towards Dungeness somewhere, but where it went, I don't know. We only laid a fire of one. Her observation post was down on Dungeness, and we were dug in more or less around the guns with foxholes, just in case there was an aircraft, air landing at all.
Any incidents that happened to you there?
We were bombed down there for the first time. Never been bombed before, but we knew what was happening when we heard it coming down.
Did you think the Germans would invade?
Yes. Because we had nothing, I thought, well, they'd come now, it wouldn't be long. Because I thought at first we had an army behind us, but apparently we didn't. There was nothing better than what we were. And that's very inexperienced, I hadn't fired a rifle.
Did you see anything of the air battles? Or
oh, yes. I counted 84 German planes at one go in the sky above me, going towards London. We took a prisoner, a messenger was shot down near us. We ran out into the woods and found him with no boots on. Never found his boots at all. I don't know why. He had a terrible injury in his leg. The Spitfire had shot him down. The burst had hit his ankle in his terrible state. He'd come from Boulogne, apparently.
How did you know that?
Well, I asked him. I can speak a little German.
How did you come to know German?
Night school. I was interested in the language.
What did you do with him?
Well, we took him to our billet and handed him over to the officers, and they attended him after that. They got an ambulance come to take him, took him away.
How was he treated?
Very well. We never harmed it at all, or no animosity at all. That was my affair, because I wouldn't do that, but some were not quite so kind, but he was all right.
What did the ones who were not quite so kind do?
A lot of them have come from London, been bombed. They weren't very sympathetic to the people that did it sort of thing. They sort of classed him as one of them.
So what did they do to him?
Nothing. Oh no, it was quite a cray rain. They couldn't touch him or harm in any way.
And then?
We took him to the officers and I think they gave him a drink and treated him very well. And then he was taken away. I didn't see him actually go, but I think an ambulance took him.
What other incidents do you remember from this time?
I can remember being bombed at Limp in Kent. But no casualties, but a lot of damage to the air runway there. We had no leave, that was all cancelled, of course. And slowly, the trickle of the proper equipment came through, but it took a long time, about 2 years, I suppose, really. We still had civilian trucks. We had no army equipment at all to start with, no vehicles at all. Just had one lorry and several cars. We weren't very mobile because our guns were on old 8-inch trailers, which were iron wheels, about 5 foot high. You can only tow them about 3 miles an hour, no matter where you're going. Our unit had very few guns. We had one or two 9.2. There's one in the museum now, just inside the door, at least it used to be. Some 8-inch howitzers and 6-inch guns. We were well under strength. We should have had 16. I think we had about 10 to start with.
How did all this affect morale?
Morale was very good, actually. I never heard anyone say we're going to lose. We always thought we were going to win in the end somehow. I don't know how, but...
Would you listen to radio at this time?
Oh, yeah. Radio, Churchill, Hall, and all that lot.
What did you think of them?
Oh, it was a bit of a joke, really. We learned from Hall that the Germans had landed in Tunisia. We heard that on the German radio first. The same as the Second Front, that came through the German radio before anything else.
And then?
We moved to a place called Alfriston in Sussex, a lovely little village. We were there about 12 months. Very nice. We covered from Eastbourne to Newhaven, more or less, with our guns. I met some lovely people there, very nice. Quite enjoyed it.
What was the unit doing there?
Still on coast defence. We had two guns at Alverston and two at Ruyp, which is about 3 miles farther inland. And it's a delightful little place in the Downs. If I'll often go back there to see the place again.
What was your job on the guns?
I was a driver at first. I got a lorry driver in Servilian Street. Driver first, and later on in Italy, I went on specialist, which is ACC or technical assistant. That meant I went to observation post or in the command post to work out the ranges and switches and all that of the guns, which I found more interesting because I knew what was going on. I had to be told to be in the limelight. I enjoyed that. The unit was very friendly. There was no sort of hard discipline. We had a sergeant major, Roger Bacon, a real gentleman. He never raised his voice, and I still get Christmas card from him. Very nice fellow. Wonderful atmosphere also the regiment. And we still have reunions. We're going to Bedford in October, but I think that'll be the last one. We've gone too old now, I'm afraid. We used to have reunions at Bexhill because D Batty was formed at Bexhill. That's where Spike Milligan, that's the connection with Spike Milligan, I'm afraid.
Did you ever meet Spike Milligan?
Oh, many times, yeah, I know him.
During the war?
No, I didn't meet him during the war, but only at reunions. I didn't meet his first wife, but the second one, Paddy, and the last one, Sheila. Sheila's a very nice lady. We got on every so well together. I've also met Harry Secombe, Prince Charles, Vera Lynn, Anne Shilton, because Spot used to bring them to the reunions. Prince Charles was unofficial, very unofficial. He was not in the papers. I was not allowed to take photographs of him inside, but I took some outside, which I still have, of course. I find it quite nice.
Was Spike Milligan's attitude to serving in the Royal Artillery in the war the same as yours?
No, I think he served from a nervous disposition, and he was wounded a little bit at Damiano Ridge with that thing, and he never came back. I think he was nervous or upset, and we called it bomb happy, which is shell shock, I think, the same thing.
Coming back to Alfriston, you said you were there for 2 years?
About a year, yes.
What happened then?
Oh, we had a muster parade, we had to go to Bexhill. All the regiment accumulated at Bexhill, and from there, We had a muster parade. The colonel gave us a patriotic speech, but it was a load of rubbish. We took the vehicles and guns to Barry, and I had to stay with him with three others. We were told we'd get an embarkation leave from Barry, which didn't materialise. And on Boxing Day, we went aboard the Ocean Liberty, and we sailed from there to Loch Long, Scotland. And from Loch Long, we picked up a big convoy and sailed to Algiers. Called in Gibraltar on the way. A very, very rough journey, which was suited the captain. He said, well, we won't see many U-boats in this weather. And we didn't. We landed at Algiers, January. Made our way to the front after a few days to a place near Medjez Abab called Tebes Souk.
What impression had Algiers made on you on landing?
I thought, what a dump. There was a place called, well, the Casbah, which is Ed of Baines, but if you want an English soldier to go somewhere, put it Ed of Baines, they'd go, sure as anything. We did. But they weren't very impressed with it.
Why not?
It was a dirty place and a lot of devious characters there, which I wouldn't trust.
How did you travel up to the front?
On our own vehicles. I was a scamel driver there with a gun towing scamel had. We had new 7.2 guns. We were issued at Alfreton, by the way. And they were mobile. They had big rubber pneumatic wheels. And we'd go along about 5 to 10 miles an hour with those. It took us 5 days to get to the front. And we went into action just south of Medjez Abab. We were overrun twice.
Can you describe what happened?
Well, first lot, a German of the Hermann Göring Regiment came down on the guns, paid 200 on them. There was only 40 of us. And we killed about 40 of them for no loss of air, except wounded. And later on we went to put ammunition down near Peter's Corner. First night was all right. The second night we were well and truly overrun, but I laid in the brushwood all night, like a lot of others. The war went by me. I could hear Germans all around me, but they didn't tread on me, which is my scare. That's where Hans Teske was, on the other side there somewhere, in the big push. But 2 days later they retreated, and we got it all right.
So this was an infantry charge, you mean?
No, well, on their side, the paratroopers.
You mean they dropped?
No, they didn't drop them, but they were a parachute regiment. They were the elite of the German army, apparently. And they only took orders from the south, not from the other ranks. I think they were very well trained men, actually.
What had happened to the Allied infantry who were supposed to be covering you?
Well, there was no one covering us at the time because we went about 3 miles way out to lay ammunition for the big push. Took that ammunition out and camouflaged it. Second time out, we couldn't get to the same place because the Germans were there. We lost 24 out of 33. And I was one of the few that got out.
How were the German paras killing your comrades?
Well, machine gun, Spandau, and rifle fire, stick grenades. We were separated, so they... There was no sort of pitched battle. We were isolated, and they were trying to find us. We lost one gun that night, but we got it back 2 days later, well and truly booby-trapped. But we managed to clear it, or the engineer cleared it, and we used it again.
Did the German paras take any prisoners?
Yes, all their men were taken prisoner. None were killed. And we got
all whose men?
All the A Battery 56. They're all taken prisoner. Surprised, and they could do nothing about it. We lost the captain and about 23 men. But when the hostility finished, we got them back. They say the Germans are treating them very well. And in fact, exceedingly well.
What else do you remember about the fighting near Major Sobab?
Well, I can remember one or two comical incidents, but Major Sobab was sort of in the middle, and who occupied it first, they usually had charge for the night, sort of thing. We were very close to Longstop Hill, which is called Jebel Amira, the Red Mountain. I was out there 2 years ago, and it was a lovely place for a picnic there.
What were the amusing incidents?
The amusing incident was that when the Medjez al-Bab one day, see what we could find, went into a church, and one of the fellows went up in the loft and found a lovely harmonium there. So I went up and played on it. And when the padre came to the year the next time, I told him about it. He said, could you get it for me? And I said, I suppose we could. So when we had a chance, we went into Medjez al-Bab, went to the church, it was still there. We took a load of rope, went up in the loft, or balcony you may call it, tied the ropes on the handles, which is about 30 foot up from the floor, lowered it over the balustrade, let it gently go, and the handles came out. It's the first time I've ever seen a harmonium drop 30 foot and splatter on the floor. When the padre come next time, he said it's not a very good condition, so I don't think we ought to get it. So that was accepted.
Any other amusing incidents?
Yes, we was in action once at Banana Ridge. We just moved in, and the officer gave the signal to the cohorts of the gun. He sent them through in the clear. Didn't decode it, did he? Luckily, nothing happened. I suppose the Germans thought we'd having them on. I later met a German who used to listen to the English Army radio. He had compiled a dictionary, and with the Army radio, at a certain time, we'd change our wavelengths. It was called Tiger. Tiger name means you change your wavelength quickly. He said, in the next war, change your operator, not just the wavelength. We just tuned and we picked him up again. It was so easy. So I'll remember that.
Did Banana Ridge come before or after Major Sobab?
After. Banana Ridge is almost on the main Tunis Major Sobab road. I can show you on a map later on.
What happened to your unit at Banana Ridge?
We had the perimeter explosion. The shell, as it loaded, just touched the top of the breech and it went off. Killed two. And that was a sad thing, really. Didn't hurt the gun, but set everything afire. And I've been back to the cemetery where they were buried.
Why did this premature explosion occur?
It must have been a faulty fuse, because a fuse should be safe until it actually leaves the breech. Because in the fuse is a shear pin, which when the shell starts rotating in the air, it shears a pin and a shutter runs back, and then it's alive.
What kind of artillery pieces did your unit have at this time?
7.2. All had 7.2. Howitzers. 19 battery was sent down to Kasserine, so we got there because the rumble had broken through there. He'd almost reached Tabessa. Had he reached the coast, he would have cut the lot off. But he wasn't strong enough to carry a fourth.
What did the unit think of 7.2 inch howitzers?
Very good, actually. The range wasn't all that great, about 7 or 8 miles, but fairly accurate. They were ideal for maintenance warfare. And that's what we were used for when we landed in Italy afterwards, of course. We're always in the Apennines somewhere.
Were you still doing the lorry driving job?
Yes, till we reached a place called Loro in Italy, and I became a specialist. I was always trained to be a specialist.
What kind of specialist?
You work on the observation post, which you observe any enemy movement, gunfire, and send back all the information. Or you're in the command post, dealing with the range, switch, and all things connected with a gun. The meteor report, which comes every 4 hours, had to be worked out. Because I'm very fond of mathematics, and suited me to the ground.
What happened to you and the unit after Banana Ridge?
Banana Ridge, we went, ran forward to some other well-known ridge, I can't think of at the moment, but we finished up at a place called Hammond Lift, right by the bay of Tunis Palace. Lovely little spot. We actually went swimming there. It's not far from Cap Bon. And after that, we saw the German army surrender. They came in droves and droves. I wonder where they all came from. They were driving themselves in lorries. And we had about a week's there, and we were sent to a place called Ain Abessa, back in Algeria, about 400 to 500 miles away, near the town of Saitif. And not far from there was Bougie on the coast. We had a rest camp on the coast there, very nice. But we're on a plateau, 3,000 odd feet, very hot in daytime, but cool at night, it's quite nice. It was there until September.
Were there also Italian prisoners?
I never saw any Italian prisoners. I have no doubt there was, because Italy was still at war with us then.
Any contact with the Tunisian population?
No. They're very standoffish. I made no friends there at all, which is unusual for me. We weren't welcome, I don't think. I think they would have preferred the Germans, to be honest.
What do you remember happening next?
From there we had a sudden notice to go to Bizerta, because the invasion of Salerno was going to start. We did Salerno 2 or 3 days, and then we went to Salerno. We landed there.
Did you land under fire?
Yes, oh yeah. We hit the beach, and we found there was 7 foot of water, which is no good. So the captain went astern and managed to wrap a halter in the screw. So we had to stay in the bay all day while the welders or cutters tried to free us. We were very close to the water spout, and we thought the Germans were shelling the coast round by Amalfi. We found later on it wasn't, it was we were shelling from the war spot. So the Germans were still on the coast when we were there. But we landed, went straight into action just off the beach. And 2 or 3 days later, the Germans retreated. Went up near Vesuvius that way, to Naples.
How bad an experience was it at Salerno?
Very nerve-wracking, actually. There was another thing that annoyed us there was the fact that we had a lot of Americans on our boat, and they had better ration than what we did. We were on hardtack, and they still had grapefruit juice and all things, tomato juice, egg, bacon, but we still had biscuits and cheese or jam or something.
Did you ever get any of their rations?
Oh, yes. Never said no.
Who never said no?
We never said no, because they were so much better than us. They had rice pudding with prunes or something, you know, it was lovely. And they had sea rations, which is far better than ours. We had compo rations. You've got to have compo rations to know what it means. Compo tea is made of, you boil a cup of water and put powder in it, and that's tea. Not very nice stuff at all.